HPPodcraft.com.
The glare of the lights terrified and blinded me. I crouched there, in a corner of the room, looking at the empty bed and seeing, in the corridor beyond, women in nurses' uniforms passing from room to room. I tried to fly, and discovered that my left wing was injured. I could only crouch there, shaking with terror, in spite of my frantic desire to fly round and round the walls of the little room in search of some refuge beyond the reach of earthbound creatures. I saw a nurse with golden hair pass along the corridor, and that hair of hers seemed to me a haven of rest. If only I could fly to it and conceal myself within it. For I had become a bat. A bat with a man's intelligence, a man's memories, striving to emerge from a confused mass of jumbled recollections.
That was the introduction to the story Batman by Lou Merrill. One of the most perplexing stories I've ever read, not because of the plot or the characters, but perplexing because I'm still not sure why this story was written and what it was attempting to do.
I agree that this story addresses the central questions of man's existence. Why are we here? What are we trying to do? It's a masterpiece of pulp fiction, maybe the best story we've ever read on the show, to be honest. And that's partly because of the premise, yes. It's partly because of the very emotional writing, but I think it's also because of the performance of the text.
Okay.
A lot of people have these debates. Do you like Christian Bale's Batman? Do you like Michael Keaton's Batman? Adam West? This Lighthouse Twilight guy's coming up soon with his Batman? But for my money, it's Chad Pfeiffer's Batman. If you expand the field a little bit to include any character called Batman, and if you include ultra-specific internet radio shows, I mean, it's at least the silver standard.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm Chad Pfeiffer. This is Strange Studies of Strange Stories.
And I'm Chris Lackey. We're here on Patreon.
And the reader is me this week because I loved the story. All of it made me laugh. So I just wanted to knock it out myself. I just had to.
Let's talk about Lou Merrill.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pen name. The real name of the author is Avigdor Russo Emmanuel, better known as Victor Russo, a.k.a. H.M. Egbert, a.k.a. V.R. Emmanuel. His spicy stories were under the pen name Lou Merrill. He was born in London in 1879. He went to college at Oxford at Balliol. He left there, went to South Africa, did some odd jobs for a few years. In 1899, he enlisted in the Mounted Infantry and fought in the Boer Wars. Well, I don't know if he actually got into fighting because he was discharged 35 days after he enlisted.
Wow.
Why?
Bat-like conduct. It's clear. Bat-like conduct, unbecoming of an officer or a private in this case.
He returned to London, wrote and published his first novel, Derwent's Horse. He left London and then moved to New York in 1901. He wrote a second novel in 1902 called Spartacus.
Not the Spartacus. That's a novel by Howard Fast. Although some of this author's westerns, some of Victor's westerns were later adapted into films, much later. And he wrote some silent screenplays.
In 1908, he became an editor for Harper's Weekly and stayed there for 3 years. In 1909, he wrote a series of stories, The Surgeon of Souls, about Dr. Ivan Brodsky, who used faith and hypnotism to lay ghosts. Not sure exactly what that means.
Well,
I mean, put them to rest, right?
It means
that's
put
what
them
that
to
means.
Rest.
He also did a series, The Devil's Chair, and this sounds rad. John Haynes, an Englishman stripped of inherited land in America, is paralyzed by a bullet to the spine and falsely imprisoned. While in a prison workshop, he fashions a gyroscopic device that, whilst adhered initially to a boot, propels him a couple of hundred miles per hour. While affixed to any object, the device cannot be removed until he deactivates it. Once free from his prison, Haynes uses the device to enact retribution on all of his enemies.
So kind of a Count of Monte Cristo story, except I don't understand when you say it propels him. Does that mean he can fly or jump?
No, I think he's like the Flash. I think he could run really fast, hundreds of miles an hour.
I was thinking it just said propel a couple. I was like, do you put it under your boot? And you're just like, oh, bye, I'll see you later. You're flying off into the sky somewhere. Oh, okay, so it makes him really fast.
The Surgeon of Souls was reprinted in Weird Tales in 1926 and 1927, where he got into the pulps. He wasn't making enough money when he started, so he decided, you know what? These spicy stories, they get you a little scratch. And he wrote hundreds of them and often took old stories that didn't sell and added sexy stuff to them.
Sometimes he did this in very desperate calls to the editor, I imagine. Listen, you know that motorcycle story I wrote? Okay, how about the motorcycle has boobs now? I need a job, Jimbo. I need it bad.
He retired around 1947 and he died in 1960.
Okay, Jimbo, you know that OK Corral shootout piece I did? Same story, but they're blowing kisses at each other. I need an advance, Jimbo.
This story, Batman, was in the February 1936 issue of Spicy Stories. I didn't really find it spicy in any way, but in case it just happened to like tickle your spicy bone.
You think that there's some portion of our audience that are into being kissed by bats? And you don't want to alienate
exactly.
them.
I definitely don't want to alienate them.
It's so funny to me, though, because I know you're being funny, but the fact that you came into the story with that angle, because I picked it out of an anthology, and I didn't know that spicy meant sexy till we did the other story and you explained that. You know, for all I knew, spicy was the person who put out all these genre magazines. Like, is Jimbo spicy? And these are his mysteries. The lascivious part of the story was that he was sneaking into the rooms of what they keep saying. He's sneaking into the homes of strange women and nuzzling them, essentially. Yeah. But just for my own enjoyment, I kept reading it as he's sneaking into the rooms of strange women, as i.e. he's a bat who has to seek out the other oddballs, you know, who are going to be into, like, they're just strange women.
Let's just get into the magic that is Batman. From the top of the story, we have found that our protagonist, John Charters, has had his brain somehow put into a bat's body. Very fuzzy on the details, as well as any explanation on how the human brain could possibly fit into a bat's body. Eventually,
It's mostly water. Go ahead. You wring it out and slip it in there.
We get some answers eventually, but not until the end of the story.
This isn't At the Mountains of Madness, Chris. There's no need to lead with the details. I'm told a man is in a little bat's body. I accept it. As you say, find out more later. This is how Mr. Spicy likes to unspool his mysteries.
Now, he is in a hospital and he's escaping. His mind is jumbled. He finds his primal bat mind taking over from time to time. But in this moment, he remembers his brain was put into a bat body by his nemesis, Roger Dean. Not to be confused with the artist Roger Dean, who did all those Yes in Asia album covers.
Oh, absolutely not. Those are excellent. Also not to be confused with Dean. He's got the brain of a bat. Who had said that? Roger Dean, who had transformed me into this low form of life by grafting my brain into the body of one of my species. Roger Dean, who was jealous of me and wanted to supplant me with Alice.
John has vague memories of having business troubles and quarrels with Alice, and then even thinking about suicide, but it's all very fuzzy to him.
And this got, again, a genuine laugh out loud for me. He goes, what did it matter? I was a bat now. And soon they would discover that I had escaped from them and they would catch me and put me in a cage. For we bats are only able to live in freedom. You can't cage us. We die. And Roger Dean wouldn't want me to die. He wanted to gloat over me and show me to Alice. If only my left wing hadn't been broken.
Now, he can fly, it turns out, just not very well.
At first, I didn't even realize he was a small bat. I thought maybe he was like, maybe you did too, that he was like a big man bat or some version of it with bat parts like the fly or something like that.
No, well, you told me that before. You said that, oh no, this is a story about a guy in a little tiny bat's body. And I said, oh my God, that's rad.
Oh, well, that's good. So you went into it going, tiny bat body, and it's going to have a lot of sex.
Yep.
Well, it was revealed to me in the prose here, because it says, something tapped softly against the window pane. I looked up and saw another bat and knew it was my mate. I scrambled up the windowsill, my tiny furry body creeping beneath the shade so silently.
She leads him to an abandoned quarry on the outskirts of town and into a bat cave with all these other bats. As I followed, scrambling with my bat wing, a delicious odor began to come into my nostrils, growing stronger and stronger as I penetrated to the innermost recesses of the labyrinth. The odor of warm, soft bodies like my own.
Hey, what the f***, man? Did I just catch wind that Chris Lackey's doing his take on Batman?
He snuggles with his batmate and they sleep the day away together with the other bats in the cave. So that's as spicy as that gets with the bats, at least.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm thinking, is this just a precursor to some weird bat stuff that's going to happen here? Spicy bat things?
My thought was, okay, this is where the story's going. Not, well, this is kind of tame. You know, that's it's such a different perspective. really seemed like the setup for an orgy. I mean, I guess that if you have like the lens that you're watching a porn, then any movie would be that way though, right? People are walking out of the office, you know, everything would be, he's getting in that cab, that bat's going home.
Yeah.
Here I hung in my loathsome bat form, locked tight in the embrace of my mate, which had never ceased to cling to me through those long hours of sleep. I was shut off forever from the world of human beings, from the woman whom I still loved with my human brain, though she seemed very far in the past. I must go to her and find out whether she had married Roger Dean. This bat is having concerns of, did they get married?
And he's moved on already too. He's got a new batmate. So like, what's the issue really?
I think that might've been the part that was really funny where it's like, you've both moved on from the past, but it's still a sting when that person gets married. You know, it was just such a sophisticated.
And he's a bat.
My human mind was in a sliding door scenario. What could have been? While my bat body nuzzled with my baby.
He also discovers that he has the impulse to bite Alice and drink her blood. When he's thinking of her, he wants to get her. And he's not a vampire bat. He notes this.
No.
They say the vampire bat lives only in South America, but the instinct is latent in all of us.
I think I'm coming around to this Batman.
Which, the one in the
Chris
story?
Chris Lackey's Batman. I think
I
like
no.
it. So you said he can fly a little bit. I don't know if he can. I think... Because he says, I can't fly to catch insects, or I can't fly well enough.
Yeah, and because he talks about flittering up a tree and doing a few other things later in the story, so it seems like he can fly a little bit, but not in any meaningful way.
It's short bursts, like say you had a device on your boot that could send you 100 miles in a direction, 100 miles per hour in a direction. It's very similar.
He flitters to the house, or crawls. He's focusing on his hatred of Roger Dean and how he's turned John into a bat to torture him. A punishment far worse than death.
The other bats take off from the quarry, and he can't fly with them because his wing's broken.
I worked my way down to the ground and began moving silently through the streets of our town until I reached the one on which Alice lived. So this is a little bat limping around the city like the tiniest of Tims. Further, it says, the town was dim to me, though I could see plainly in the darkness.
Now, how do bats see in the dark?
Is it sonar?
That's right. Echolocation, sonar. So I think this little tiny bat is limping around on his feet in the town going, looking for the houses of strange women.
It's kind of preposterous to think that he would be able, because it says on the outskirts of town is this old quarry that they're nesting in. How would he possibly make it into town in one night and back again?
How surprising would it be, though, if it was like bats are walking among us all the time? You just never thought to look. Like, you're going to be out later in the day and you're going to look down and there's going to be a little bat with a crutch going, oh my God.
Now he scrabbles up the side of the house and up to the open window. He does a bit of creeping and peeping.
Oh, do tell.
And it's Roger Dean and a woman he believes, Alice, locked in a passionate embrace. He overhears them talking about their recent honeymoon. So they did get married. No!
For a few moments, the blind, impotent rage of a bat filled my heart as I realized how helpless I was.
Why is it in that moment, it's the impotent blind rage of a bat? Oh, because it's blind. Maybe that's what it is.
Well, I just, he's an inch in size and has no strength to do anything, I think is the,
that's,
you know,
the impotence, right? But it just, it's related in such a way where the reader's supposed to go, oh, that kind of rage. Yeah. I felt blind impotent rage from a bat before. He must really be worked up.
Now, she turns and reveals that it's actually not Alice, but another woman. And she asks Roger about Alice and if he had feelings for Alice. And he says, no. We're just friends. We've only just ever been friends.
And Batman interprets that as he discarded Alice, too. That's what a bastard he is. Yeah. He made me into a bat, had his way with her, kicked her to the curb.
Oh. So John is furious. Roger then talks about John escaping from the hospital, and the woman asks if he would have ever gotten well. And Roger says, well, he had the brain of a bat, a human brain functioning, what there was of it, by blind instinct. They believe that he escaped and fell into the river and died. A body was discovered, but the face was too damaged to know if it was him or not. It kind of implies that maybe there was a bat running around in his body, that maybe there was a swappy thing going on.
Like a fly kind of scenario.
Yeah. And that maybe the bat tried to fly and then fell to his death in the river and died.
Well, there it is. He's got the human brain in the bat body, and that's the human with the bat brain. I thought for sure that's what it was.
So John tries to get her off talking about the dead guy and back to the lovin', and the woman sees something in the window. John flutters down and hides in a tree. Roger runs out with a gun, but he can't find the bat, so he goes back inside.
I was hanging quite invisible to him in the shrubbery beside the house.
Started to kind of figure things out at this point, though.
Oh, did you?
It was that bat-brained expression. He doesn't say anything about working with bats. He just says he's kind of bat-brained. That's like still a common expression, actually, right? Somebody will say somebody's bat-brained or has bats in their belfry. Like any weird tale, it was hard to know exactly what was going on. It was funny at the beginning of the show when you go, I don't really know what the point of the story is or what it was trying to get across. And I thought you were saying that in a negative way, but if that was on a Robert Aikman show, we would be saying that's why we like it. So it was just it was just funny to hear.
John then goes to the house that he believes was Alice's house, creeps in the window, and he finds sexy sleeping Alice. I can see her body in the rumpled sheer night dress, the rounded orbs of her breast, one of which droops softly against her arm while the other pointed invitingly toward me. Rounded orbs with no wizard to ponder them? All this feels very juvenile. It's that same kind of something like a 12-year-old would describe breasts.
The fact that one's pointing invitingly toward me, is that how you think it works?
He crawls over to the bed and up to the pillow to bite her neck, but before he does, he can see that it's not Alice. But it doesn't matter. He still wants to bite her. And she stirs and says, is that you, darling? She thinks the bat is her lover, I guess? A little bat? Now she reaches around to where his neck would have been, and for a moment, he feels like they're actually kissing. What?
Wow.
She comes out of it and says, who are you? Are you the man who breaks into houses at night and makes love to strange women? He tries to answer her, but he can't because he's a bat, so he's beep, 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 beep. And he wants her blood, but then she says this. She goes, it doesn't matter. I adore you for your daring. What?
This favors my interpretation that it's not making love to strange women, but making love to strange women. Because this is a strange response to a little bat coming into, or a person.
At this point, we get the feeling that she still thinks it's a person that's coming in to rape her. She's open to it, so I guess that's a thing that happens in these pulps. He bites her, and that is a bridge too far for her. She's not that strange. She runs off, and he escapes out the window. He guesses that he got the directions wrong, but the night's almost over, so he has to return to the cave. His mate is there. She has some bugs to feed him. He loves the bug eating. And eventually, again, he falls asleep in her warm embrace. Days or weeks seem to go by. He's forgotten about Alice because he has his mate, and she's feeding him while his broken wing is mending. But he's pulled back to human thinking when he has a craving for blood. And then he remembers where Alice actually lives, and then he goes to see her.
I was sad that he was going to remember that because it seemed like the bat life was pretty nice, you know?
Yeah, he was into it. Finally, he finds the right house. Alice is there. She hears him, and he says to her, it's me, John. It comes out as chirps and squeaks, but...
Of course.
Yeah. Because he's a bat. However, she says, John, John, oh, thank God.
She knew me. The very force of my love had somehow enabled us to communicate by telepathy with each other. Furry. Repulsive little thing though I had become, as I scrambled toward her bed, she knew that the soul of me was the soul of the man she had loved. I just want to see the scene.
Yes. He explains that Roger Dean made him into this freak of nature. He did something to John at the hospital. John's trapped in this little bat body. He says that he's happy that she didn't marry that monster. John saw Roger with his new wife at his house. And then Alice says, that was you? And then John asks if she's afraid or freaked out by any of this, and she says no.
If I were a man, I should ask you to let me creep into your arms and lie there. But I'm a bat, you see. I live in the quarries, and I have a mate who brings me food. Am I frightening you?
She asks if there's anything she can do for him, and he wants to be closer to her, and she says yes. He says, you're not afraid that I'm going to get in your hair? It's like the third or fourth time this is mentioned in the story about getting into women's hair.
Well, yeah, that's what bats do. I mean, that's what I heard when I was little, didn't you?
I've heard that, but I don't know if that's based on any kind of reality.
No, there is no reason a bat would want to do that. I'm sure that it has happened at some point in the past. But my mother specifically told me that bats would fly at your head and get entangled in your hair and then might not be able to get out of it. So that was my imagining of how most bat meetings would go.
But she says, I'm not afraid of that. I don't care. I love you for who you are. And then he goes, well, you know, I could really go for a bit of your blood. And she says, yes, again. Okay. This woman is very open-minded. He just nips her a bit, but then he has this intuitive revelation that if he actually drinks her blood, the human side of him will be lost and only the bat will remain. So he stops and he doesn't drink her blood and he could feel himself in control again.
Like most Batman stories, it comes down to finding that balance between the bat and the man.
And this part, I love it here. I caressed her skin with my claws, fondled her smooth throat, and stroked her hair, thinking all the while how great her love must be that she could endure such a repulsive little thing so close to her.
Spicy.
She asks him if his arm was any better, and he stoked that she said arm instead of wing. She sees the true him.
Wow.
He tells her that his mate feeds him bugs, and he has to go back. Alice should forget about him and just go on with her life. But she says, no, I'm coming back with you to the cave. And he protests, but she says, you can't stop me. I'm a giant human and you're a little bat. So he agrees to let her come.
I had always known that Alice was no prude, just the sincerest, simplest, sweetest girl in the world. Why would she want to hide her lovely body from a bat, even though it had a human brain?
She decides to change from her bedclothes into her outdoor clothes in front of him. Mm-hmm. Spicy.
That's the spicy part. There's even she sits down to put on her stockings.
Yeah, a lot of
which
details.
Which I think implies that since he's a tiny little bat, you know, he can get a pretty good view of every...
He could see everything.
By the way, the reason that he tells her that he's eating bugs is because she says, I want you to come with me so you're not eating out of the trash anymore.
Yeah.
So there's some suggestion that he's been seen maybe out on the streets. I was going, okay, I'm pretty sure he's a homeless man.
Oh, yeah, I totally missed it.
I had been reading this and just laughing so hard. And when it came down near the end here on the fact that this was a guy who was like in mental distress on the streets, I kind of felt bad, you know? I was like, oh, man. Do you have to do that to me? There was a really great scene right after that, though, that made me wonder if I was right or not, because it says, I'm ready, dear John, she said. Let's go downstairs. It's easier for me to climb down the front of the house, I answered. I'll wait for you outside. Oh, she gasped, pressing her hand to her breast, and I saw the tears come into her eyes. But I was already scrambling out the window, and I was hardly down before the front door opened. So he went out the window and climbed down the front of the house, Dracula style.
Yeah.
So even we think he did, but I'm pretty sure he did that, even if he's not a little bat and he's a person.
Yeah. That's the reveal that we're kind of spoiling already, is that he's not a little bat. But when I was reading this, I thought he was a bat still, because that was just my framing of the whole thing. And I thought this was some kind of bat fetish thing. So.
But that's why she responds with, oh, okay, you're going
to
do that.
So they go to the quarry. And he thinks that she's going to freak out because of the bats, but she just covers her head as she goes into the cave. He says, my place is on this wall. When he says that, she breaks down and cries, sobs as if her heart is broken. She asks him if he's been living here these past 3 weeks, and he's surprised that it's been that long.
And then she says, all right, well, I got to take off for a bit. Do you mind if I come back later? And he says, yeah, that's fine.
So after he drifts off to sleep, there's a commotion. The bats all take flight as something comes into their cave. Bright lights are flashed around and they focus on him. He can't fly because of his wing, and it's three men. And I was like, oh no, she ratted him out. One of them says, he's there. And another voice, a woman's voice, says, be careful, don't hurt him. And of course, it's Alice.
I thought it actually, once they revealed that he was a guy who thinks he's a bat, it would have been an extra cool twist if he then manifested bat power, you know?
Yeah.
He'd have gone, leave me alone, and wings pop out and he flies out of the cave or something. That would have been cool.
The man tells another guy to go get a pole so they can poke him out of there. Alice screams, don't hurt him. He's half paralyzed. And then we finally get the reveal. One of the guys is Roger Dean. The other one is Chief. I am assuming the chief of police. Mm-hmm. He says, Chief, this is John Charters. He was definitely the guy that was breaking into women's houses. He says, I recognize him the moment I shine the light on him. in the cave, even with his beard and those rags. He's not actually a bat. He's just a poor, insane man who thinks he's a bat. I felt like I should have figured it out, but like I said, I was in bat fetishist mode, so I was completely missing it.
You don't even need the sex element to have been. I mean, I just liked a guy that turns into a bat. That was enough for me. So I was disappointed that this happened as well.
Yeah, and it explains everything.
On the second reading, I found all of the clues, but I really, yes. It was around here that it was confirmed for me.
Yeah. I mean, everything, you know, obviously, how can a human brain fit in a bat's body, and all these women screaming and the people seeing him at the window, and it all makes sense. It's the whole M. Night Shyamalan thing. He tried to kill himself after he thought Alice and Roger were having an affair, and he shot himself in the head, but it didn't kill him. It just gave him severe brain damage.
This is what Roger says. Here's my explanation, Chief. When this foolish fellow fired that slug into his temple, after a perfectly causeless outbreak of jealousy about me and Miss Drew, why, we've known each other since we were kids. He blew away the whole frontal area of the brain, instantly reducing himself to the condition of an automaton, acting by purely reflex actions, like a bird or a bat. Under such conditions, his future life would be a purely vegetative one, were it not for the fact that we have two brains, one of which is never developed. So I guess we have an extra brain. I think he's talking about the left brain and the right brain. But when he said perfectly causeless outbreak of jealousy, come on, that definitely means they were having an affair. Thou doth protest too much. But there's still some splaining about the brains. He says, I was trying to induce the frontal area of the brain to take up the task laid down by the left, which had been destroyed. Had I succeeded, he would have been a human being again. I may succeed yet. He must have heard me refer to him having the brain of a bat, and by the power of suggestion, accepted the idea that he was a bat. But this fact gives me, thank God he didn't say shit for brains or something like that. But this fact gives me hopes that he may yet recover.
You know, how much better would have regarding Henry have been if Harrison Ford thought he was a bat?
That's a pretty good movie too, but you're right.
Oh, it would have been so much better.
And then it would be Harrison Ford's Batman.
Part of his broken wing thing was due to his paralysis from brain damage. Somehow, tapping into his primal brain has helped him to speak again. They finally have the pole and they're going to get him down when a switch flips in John's mind.
And suddenly, the bat life, with all its wonder and its glory, was closed to me forever. Suddenly, I realized that I was John Charters, clinging precariously to this wall in a vile litter of evil-smelling filth. With three leaps, I was on the ground, all of them at 300 miles per hour. With three leaps, I was on the ground. Alice, I'm sane, I cried. Don't touch me! But her arms were around my neck, and she was sobbing out her joy upon my shoulder.
And that's the end of the story.
I love an ending line like that. I'm sane! Don't touch me!
Wait, so it says he clinging precariously to this wall in a vile litter of evil-smelling filth?
Yeah.
Were there actually bats in the cave?
Yeah, I don't know.
Was he actually living with bats or not? Or is that part of his delusion?
I think he was. I think maybe he wasn't hanging upside down getting hugged by a bat, but...
No.
It was delusional, but there were probably bats in the cave, and maybe that's why he went there, possibly. I mean, yeah. It was saying things about them flying out and going crazy when people were coming in, so.
Yeah.
I don't know. Bob Kane introduced Batman around 39, and this was 36.
Yeah.
It's the original Batman.
Technically true.
There was a shadow kind of character around the same time that was called the Black Bat that was in the pulps. Batman was a shadow Doc Savage ripoff himself when Bob Kane and Bill Finger introduced him. A lot of his backstory came later. There was also a 20s movie called The Bat where the villain had a cape that was a lot like Batman's original cape. There was a dude called just The Bat in the early 30s who again was a shadow Doc Savage kind of ripoff.
Right.
Even wore the mask because it scared, struck terror in the hearts of criminals. So there was a lot of bat dude stuff in the air when people were trying to just do knockoff shadows, basically.
I've seen people reference this story as being the inspiration for Bob Kane, but I can't find any specific reference that Bob Kane ever read this story.
Me neither.
I just think it happens to be called Batman and that's it.
And we read weird fiction of the vampire type, so it just seems like at some point there's going to be a Batman.
Of course.
Kind of story. Yeah.
Or a Bat Boy. I want to thank our reader, Chad Pfeiffer, for creating the third best Batman ever.
Wow. Yeah. Hey, I'm happy to be in there somewhere. And the guys above me are fantastic Batmans as well. So no resentment there. You know, it's a club, really. It's a club of Batman.
Yeah.
Me and Kilmer and and you and...
All together now. Big happy family. But you know, our real big happy family, that's our patrons.
It's true. I'm going to thank some of them right now, and I'm going to start by thanking Emily Smith.
I want to thank Rick Leiter.
I want to thank Susanna Bjornberg.
I'd like to thank Alexandra Bamford.
A blarg blarg, thank you.
Tom Newholm, thank you.
Thank you, Halen Brenna.
I'd like to thank Brian Barr.
Jordy Rose, thank you.
And lastly, I'd like to thank Ryan Maloney.
Thank you so much for supporting the show. Next month, we're going to do some werewolves. Yeah. And they're all going to be werewolf stories that we found in Weird Tales. I will say, it was fun doing these pulps, but they are kind of crappy stories. It was funny that Dr. Satan got so panned by readers in the pages of Weird Tales, because the same thing kind of happened on our show, where people were like, enjoyable episode, but that story was terrible, you know. Rest assured, the nice thing is that almost, I've already read most of these werewolf stories. Even though they are in the pages of Weird Tales, they're dynamite. Like, I like all of them, and I mean that.
That's great.
I mean that for real. Like, they're legitimately good werewolf stories, and I don't really understand why when they were making The Wolfman, they didn't mind, especially this first one we're going to do, the Werewolf of Ponkert. So that's what we're going to kick off the month with. Next month, we've got a bonus episode on Manimal coming up still, though, this month. The crazy pulpiness isn't done yet.
No. It's not.
We get an excerpt of it, of a man animal from the 80s. That'll be on the last day of this month. But that's all we have for January. For now, I'm Chad Pfeiffer.
I'm Chris Lackey, and you've been listening to Strange Studies of Strange Stories.
Exclusively on Patreon. HP Podcast.